Hello and welcome to the Weekside Podcast. I'm here in Miami with Connor Orr. We are sitting outdoors, kind of near the hotel pool on some little lounge chairs.
Yeah.
Live from Miami for Super Bowl Live.
Yeah, Super Bowl Live right underneath some sort of large interstate freeway. So yeah.
A lot of ambient noise.
So there's some ambient noise here, but we figured that's part of the adventure, right, is taking you guys with us down to Live.
That's what I thought, Connor.
Yeah.
We got in on Sunday. Today is Tuesday. Still several days to go till the game. This is always how Super Bowl week is. There was always a lot of waiting.
What did you do before we even get to the meat of this? What did you do for your, what was your in-flight entertainment situation on the way down here? What did you do?
I got the free iMessage on Delta and was messaging people like you.
Nice. I got 15 minutes into A Star Is Born with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, and it was so bad that I turned it off and I read a book.
Wow. That seems like a movie that you would not want to just watch 15 minutes of.
It failed to grab me, and it was on the free Delta or United earbuds, and so Bradley Cooper plays this, like, drunk country music star, and so his voice was already very marbly, and then in the cheap headphones was basically illegible. But I think that's kind of part of his mystique or whatever in the movie, that he's this rambling man in search of love, and it just didn't do. Lady Gaga seemed wonderful, some great vocal performances, but I just had to shut it down, you know.
Your Super Bowl week has gotten off to a little bit of a difficult start, Connor. Yesterday, I was in the hotel lobby, and you walked in, and immediately all the fire alarms went off. It was a test. It was not a fire drill, but, you know, lots of alarms sounding, lots of hiccups early in the week. But like the teams here, the 49ers and the Chiefs, hopefully you get everything buttoned up while you're in Miami and get ready for the big game day. That's really the purpose of this week, Connor.
Yeah, and I would say,
hello,
you know,
Charlotte
if
Wilder,
you're,
who's walking past. We're recording the Weekside Podcast.
Wow. Do you need me to hop on the mic?
Sure, if you want to say something.
Yeah.
How's your week been so far, Charlotte?
My week's been great because it's warm here, Jenny.
It is a nice break from the weather. I was in Kansas City last week. It was a little rough.
Yes. No. I think the Super Bowl should always be in Miami. Maybe rotate between Vegas and LA if you have to. But, like, Miami's just really speaking to me. You know, everything could be going wrong, but at least there are palm trees and sun.
Yeah, and the color scheme is great. You know, you've got the teal, the pink for Super Bowl Live.
Yes.
I'm sure later in the week we'll get a sampling of the scene. Again, we're at an airport hotel, so we're a little bit far from the epicenter of things.
Yeah, I hope people are getting the ambiance of the planes landing overhead.
Yeah.
There's something kind of oddly comforting about it, like, you know, a faraway train whistle or something.
People coming from near and far for the big game, Charlotte.
Yes. Listen, I have to go use one of the questionable treadmills that I almost tore my ACL on yesterday. So, you know, best of luck on the rest of this
Thank
podcast.
Thank you.
To you as well.
Yes. Well, Godspeed, Charlotte. And so this is what this week's podcast is going to be, Connor.
Yeah.
It's going to be taking you into the Super Bowl week experience. We're going to freelance. We've ditched the five news topics because, really, Super Bowl week, you just kind of fly by the seat of your pants.
And if it's news, it's happening here. So, you know.
That's exactly right. So
that's
we
right.
will get to more of these fun topics after a quick break. Okay, Connor. 5 days until the game, we're going to go through our week a little bit. Monday night was media night, which is always a spectacle. It's now an event where fans can buy tickets. It's broadcast on NFL Network. It's become a little bit of an entertainment event. Let me ask you this. True or false, was this year's media night more or less chaotic than past?
I would say that this might be me getting older and grumpier, and so I want to say that. First, I want to couch that by saying I'm extremely grateful to be down here covering the Super Bowl, as
yes,
I am.
Yes, we're
every
just
year.
Having a little bit of fun.
Yeah,
we thought we could take the listeners along with us this week.
But I do feel like every year, media night, the decision is made somewhere in the corner of a league office that says, let's invite more people onto the arena floor and compress the area just a little bit more every year. Like, every year it feels a little bit tighter,
mm-hmm.
feels like I'm elbowing a little bit more people, and For those who don't know, media night is kind of the night that, like, everybody's allowed to go. Like, if you apply to a credential for a credential and say, like, I'm going to dress as an anteater and go ask Patrick Mahomes if he likes to eat ants, like, that you are allowed to do that at media night.
Yes.
You know, if you, this is an actual example, if you want to dress as Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz and ask Patrick Mahomes to sign your ruby red slippers, you are allowed to do that at media night, and you did get that done. He did do that for Dorothy, so I was very happy for him. Another one, if you want to dress like giant Andy Reid, 8-year-old Andy Reid from the punt, pass, and kick contest, you were allowed to do that.
Well, I thought that was actually pretty good.
That
they
was
had
funny.
They had Reid's jersey because famously in the punt, pass, and kick competition that was broadcast, the, his name was spelled
yes.
wrong, so it was
yeah.
R-I-E, and this person had that correct. So the Chiefs came in first to media night. You know, Patrick Mahomes was kind of soaking up the crowd, playing to it a little bit. They hoisted the fullback, Sherman, I think, on someone's shoulders.
Yeah.
Everyone was videoing things. And then Andy Reid came out in his typical Hawaiian shirt. And the players had worn Hawaiian shirts on the plane. So that was kind of, it was a nice little tribute that they'd done the day before. The weirdest question I got asked, and I seem to follow this person around. I seem to be at four different podiums where someone was asking about time travel. And it seemed as though one player, Sammy Watkins, had said yes, he believes in time travel. So that seemed to be this guy's opening to every player. Like, Sammy Watkins said he believes in time travel. Do you? And every player was like, well, I'll let Sammy believe what he believes in. And Mitchell Schwartz was like, I don't think I have enough information to have an informed opinion on time travel. And then there was a break, and then the 49ers came in, and I think there was, I missed the entrance, I think, for the 49ers.
The 49ers entrance was, they did that thing where they pause for a minute, and then Deion Sanders talks to two players from each team, and then the rest of the 49ers come on stage, and then it was interesting. Like, Richard Sherman seemed to lead them off into the podiums, certainly relishing that role as he does, and that got started. And I don't know. I think it was interesting. I mean, I did not hear the time travel guy. But
oh wow! Well, he was next to me for 50%
I would love
of the
to
night.
Have read that story.
Well, like, yeah, I'm not sure.
It was for a publication.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the usage of this was for, but I did get some interesting takes on the time travel. There's a lot of questions that come up these few weeks. I was going back through some of my recordings from the AFC Championship game, the post-game locker room, and there was a person that was going around saying, can you believe that you are going to the actual Super Bowl? But it was the same phrase for every person. So there's a lot of flavor. I mean, the reality is at this point in time, a lot of the, you know, answers you get aren't usable. But I will say, Super Bowl week, there is a lot of access in
there
terms
is.
Of the, you know, players and coaches are available for an hour three times. Everyone is available for an hour three times this week. So that's why you'll hear from people like Wes Welker, who don't do a lot of interviews and was peppered, of course, on Brady's future and didn't really want to weigh in there and all these other topics. And, you know, Katie Sowers, who's the assistant wide receivers coach for the 49ers, first female coach, openly gay coach, coach in the Super Bowl. She had a swarm around her, Inside Edition. And Tyreek Hill had a big swarm around him as well, and was asked about the child abuse investigation last summer that led to a suspension with the Chiefs. And he said he never doubted that he would be here playing still. Was asked what steps he's taken since then to reward the organization's faith in him, and seemed to maybe didn't fully understand the question or seemed to kind of struggle with his answer there. He mentioned that community service and then went into an answer about saying, you know, they've given him the opportunity and he plays for his kids. So it's just kind of weird sometimes you go between like really serious topics such as that where you're asking, you know, Tyreek Hill about serious allegations of violence and his path to this point. And then you're, you know, it's juxtaposed by, you know, there was somebody with a little fish game and they were like fishing poles and then they had to pick a color and answer a question or something. And the person was dressed up as like a, I don't know, a captain on a boat or something. So it's just, it's a little strange, Connor. You kind of toggle between the very serious
yeah.
and then the very
it's funny because hearing you describe this, I'm wondering if we were at the same thing. Like, there were so many weird things, so many people in strange costumes that I didn't even see any of the people that you saw. And we, like, it feels like we weren't even at the same thing. That's very interesting, though.
Yeah, you know? We had very different media night experiences.
It is funny, though, how, you know, like you said, there's just this blend, like time travel and then, you know, Tyreek Hill. And I think Tyreek Hill is a great kind of example of this because I talked to reporters that are coming in from out of the country and different countries, and it's a much bigger deal, I think, than some people think, you know. And I think the perspective of it is especially, you know, the crime itself or the alleged crime, you know, what kind of things we're talking about here. You know, there were reporters that were like, well, how is he allowed to play in this game? We don't understand, you know, like foreign press especially. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really interesting to hear a different perspective on it because, you know, I think it is, we deserve to be called out collectively, I think, as a society here on how we kind of just internalize things and say, well, let's get on to the part that's entertaining for me and mm-hmm. enjoyable for me. But some parts of Media Night make that a little bit more difficult, which is good. I think it's important to address these things and to ask these questions.
Yeah, and it's a difficult forum to address serious topics right. in. I mean, the Tyreek Hill questions, there were three of us each asked one question apiece, and I was the third question, and I'd asked him what steps he'd taken since last year, which I felt was important because that was part of when they said that the NFL decided not to suspend him. They mentioned treatment he'd be getting, and also you imagine that he works with the organization on different rehabilitative programs and such. But, you know, he didn't get into that detail, which doesn't mean none of that's going on. It's a difficult forum. But at the same time, you know, you see a player up there who's about to play in a prominent game and people around the country and around the world, like you said, Connor, have questions about it. So it's always a balance of trying to address the important stuff, but then realizing that a lot of times the answers are probably going to be unsatisfactory, at least in part because of the forum in which you're asking them.
Yeah. I parked near Richard Sherman because I wanted to write something which I did write for this morning on just like, you know, he's the kind of person that believes, I think, when he's in the Super Bowl, that this vindicates everything, right, for him, that he was right and you were wrong about everything, you know, mm-hmm. the criticizing him for, you know, going to the 49ers in the first place, criticizing the incentive-laden contract that he signed, criticizing the end of the Seattle Seahawks dynasty, and this was sort of his triumphant ride back to saying, you know, I'm right about everything and you're wrong about everything. And we did get a flavor of that, but coupled with Media Night, everybody just kind of comes to him because he gives a thoughtful, entertaining answer on anything.
Yeah.
And the potpourri of questions were just fascinating. That he at least has some sort of a take on, like Japanese cooking, which I did not think, you know, Richard Sherman was. And he said as much, he admitted that he's not a total expert, but that he did kind of get into a little bit of the hibachi style cooking and why he enjoys that. Mexico as a country, just as a nation, you know, some thoughts on that. Various incision sizes for Achilles injuries, which he got, you know, he did have an Achilles injury, but, you know, why you would do different size incisions for Achilles injuries, habits of highly successful people, you know, and this was 10 minutes of
wow,
time.
Wow, yeah.
You know? And it must be, like, mentally exhausting to be able to do that and to hold your own. So I was very impressed. I thought he did a good job.
Yeah, I do think about, like, if I were in those settings, I would give a similar answer to the time travel thing that Mitchell Schwartz did. Like, I thought that was a very good way of handling it. I don't really have enough information to have an informed opinion.
You wouldn't
opinion.
Go in on this? Here's my take. Time travel, I don't think, is politically or religiously sensitive. Maybe you would strike a nerve there with somebody who believes in a linear time kind of deal, but I would have a little bit of fun with that, right?
Maybe. I just wouldn't want to sound dumb.
So they're approaching time travel from a high-minded physics perspective and not like I have a wacky YouTube channel that I talk about.
I mean, it's probably the latter. Maybe I'm overthinking it a little bit here, Connor.
That's up my alley. Like, if I was a football player,
okay.
Like, I would love those questions because all year you're talking about, you know, the game this week and what do you need to do to prepare. I would like to spread my wings a little bit. I would like people to know what I think of time travel, which I think is totally legitimate. I think time travel is totally real.
It is amazing when you think about the you know, I struggle with words sometimes that are not written because we're writers by nature. You know, even a podcast, Connor, sometimes I'm like grappling for words. And you think about, you know, you focus all day long on this game plan, you're preparing for the Super Bowl, and like for an hour you're sitting there and you're like fielding all these questions. Or I thought about this when like I did the story on Megan Rapinoe, and she obviously talks about a lot of difficult subjects, and she seems so well informed in all of them.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's amazing, like, to be able to have the capacity to talk about a vast spectrum of subjects is something remarkable, and something that I feel like I would struggle having the confidence to do. But I guess if you were, you know, because in our jobs, you know, we write about a certain topic, or we have a very narrow, you know, thing that we're covering, or, you know, is our beat, or we can talk in depth. We pick a subject and do a story on it and do a deep dive, and then all of a sudden we become a mini expert on that and feel like we can do interviews on that or whatever. But just a random topic that I don't know is coming at me, like, I think I would really struggle with that.
If you had a podium on Media Night,
oh boy,
and you were approached about a niche topic that someone would be surprised, like, so let's say I'm a reporter from Niche Topic X magazine, and I'm sent there to find somebody that's going to shed light on this topic. What would it be that would spark your interest that you would know a lot about, and that would basically make my day as a reporter? You would be the cover story of Niche Topic X magazine.
Oh, I see. Well, yeah. I've always had a big interest in, like, earth science. I mean, I was actually a biochemistry major, but did a geobiology minor. Really should have been an earth science major, but, like, I really enjoyed, like, plate tectonics in high school.
Oh, yeah.
So I could do a deep dive in plate tectonics, you know, subduction zones and
Pangea.
Yeah, I mean, that would be really up my alley.
Wow.
How about you?
Maybe Pokemon cards?
Oh, good.
No.
That would be a little bit more fun. No one wants to read about subduction zones.
I'm a big Pangea guy, so.
Oh, you are. That's true, right? The new Pangea. If you had to pick a new franchise in the NFL, and Connor named his the new Pangea, New Pangea Polar Bears.
Right.
Correct.
Okay. This was post World War III, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lots of moving parts, moving plates. All right. So let's take a look ahead at this week. Let's each talk about one thing, Connor, that we will be doing this week. So I guess I'll talk about the pool report. That seems to be something that is.
I'm always fascinated by this, and
people are always intrigued by what the pool report is. I've only done it. I did it one other time, and then I filled in for Peter King a couple times. I feel like my biggest thing with the practice pool report. So basically, they have somebody who goes to practice Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday for each team. You watch all of practice, which is pretty cool because you see a team preparing for the Super Bowl, and you write a short 300 to 500 word report afterward. You interview the head coach, and then you go and write and file it. And basically the focus is on, like, what were there any injuries? What was the practice status of key players? And you can talk about what their focus was. You know, were they working on the 2-minute period, or you know, was it more of a walkthrough practice, or, you know, did they have a long special teams period? Sometimes teams will simulate a halftime, you know, the Super Bowl halftime everyone always talks about is longer than a regular 12-minute halftime in the rest of the season. So sometimes teams will have that kind of break in their practices. Is their music playing? So I did it for the Patriots last year. Like, I was the AFC practice pool reporter, and that was a really interesting experience. But the one thing I learned was that the Patriots just didn't do much once they got to Atlanta. Like, I was expecting to just, like, kind of have a sense of, like, how the game would go. And then I realized very quickly that, like, they'd done all of their work, all the heavy game plan stuff in Foxborough before they got to Atlanta. So it was just pretty light, like, brushing up things. So I am curious. I'm doing the 49ers this year. So I'm curious what approach they take. Because with the Patriots, as we talk about all the time, because they go to the Super Bowl so often, like, everything is planned out and regimented, and, you know, they have a sense of the routine. And I think last year they did even lighter than in years past, no pads at all in Atlanta. And so for the 49ers, first time Kyle Shanahan is leading a team to the Super Bowl as the head coach. But my biggest thing, Connor, is, like, you don't want to mess up. Like, you don't want to be the person that's, like, looking down at their notebook, or, like, you know, turn their head when, like, something big happens at practice. So there's a large sense of panic that comes with this, because you're the only one there. Like, if you miss something, like, I don't know, then it's, like, on you, and people can make fun of you.
I always thought about this, and, you know, for people to understand, like, it is awesome, and it's a big deal. You should be, like, psyched about this, that you're doing it 2 years in a row. It's, like, not, they don't let anybody just do this, you know? And you locked it down last year with Patriots. You did an amazing job, and I think you were the only person I would pick to do it, because...
Thanks, Connor.
I would...
You have to say that because you're on a podcast with me, but no, I'll buy you a drink later for the Nice comments.
I think it's like, you know, it's one of those things where I don't think I would trust anybody else.
Oh, great.
You know?
Now you're really, let's just put up a break to this, because now you're really setting me up for disaster.
Yeah, okay. I don't want
to. Let's move on to yours.
Well, what is your, I have one question. What is your sort of tactic? Do you do like eyes on the field and then blind notes, and then you kind of look, you know, kind of check them every now and then?
Yeah, that's kind of what I did. I mean, you know, I would try to look down like between plays or something, or when the periods were shifting or, you know, stretching. And the first thing you go in, you do attendance right away, try to get everybody, which can be sometimes hard because I walked into the field house last year and their Thursday practice and the Patriots were not wearing jerseys.
Oh.
So I was like, well, and you know, you're at the end, you're in like in the corner by an end zone. So there's no way you could see everybody. And,
right.
And they had, you know, 100 yards, of course, or on the diagonal. So, you know, the PR staff would help you. And the reality is every team has to put out an injury report and a practice report. So if there's someone not there, they're reporting it anyway. So it's not. But Saturday was a little nerve-wracking because, like, what if someone goes missing or doesn't show up?
Yeah.
But Saturday's also kind of cool because generally it's like the family day. Every team does it a little differently. But last year, you know, the Patriots did family day at the stadium and they didn't do any kind of walkthrough. And so they all went and, you know, Bill Belichick had his granddaughter Blakely there, who was just turned 3 at the time.
Oh, wow.
You know, she'd been to 3 Super Bowls. You know, I mean, it's pretty amazing. Maybe she was 2. I think she might have been to 3 Super Bowls before she turned 3 or something, which was pretty remarkable. So he was holding her and he had like this. If you see photos of him on family day, which sometimes I see, he's got this like string around his neck and it's actually like little macadamia packs. And it was a snack for Blakely. So came over and asked grandpa for a snack. So it was like, it was a side of Bill Belichick that you never see, you know? So that was pretty cool. I thought
that is cool.
That was probably my best memory from the pool.
And a great snack too. I mean, normally grandparents are the ones stuffing your kids full of chocolate and, you know, sugar and butter, but Grandpa Bill has the macadamia nuts, healthy fats.
Grandpa Bill was on top of it.
God, he knows everything, you know? He really does know everything. It's fantastic.
So Connor, all right, something that you're excited to do this week, something you're working on, somewhere you are excited to be.
Yeah, I would say that my favorite kind of story that I've been working on for the last few weeks has been about just the origins of the Chiefs Super Bowl team, Super Bowl IV, and the fact that, like Andy Reid, you know, Hank Stram, their old coach, was really innovative for the time. You know, a lot of football was very homogenous, and he would actually lay in a raft in his backyard pool covered in tanning oil and come up with plays.
Wow.
He would float in his backyard for hours.
That's
and
really
just,
cool.
And so he was the first person to come up with a rollout pass, so a moving pocket, so his quarterback could get free of defenders and he could throw the ball. You know, a lot of the backfield motion stuff that we see a lot, especially when like Mike Mularkey was the head coach of the Titans, so like a lot of that stuff came from Hank Stram and the Chiefs. And you know, some of the inside zone stuff that we're seeing now was really invented and popularized by him. And so to see that, and you know, kind of the Chiefs thing is, you know, the Hunts were always attracted to innovators and to people who are going to think ahead, and sort of the same ways that they thought about Hank Stram maybe back in the late 60s and early 70s were some of the same qualities that drew them to Andy Reid. And so there's a lot of parallels, I think, between those two teams.
That's a really interesting tie. You know, I was speaking to Art Rooney too today about Clark Hunt, and he was mentioning that Lamar was, because the AFL was kind of ahead of things offensively, mm-hmm. like certain rules, they played a little differently, and he was always big on pushing for rules that would allow for offensive innovation and would bring more offense to the game. And he said, imagine like what he would think of seeing Mahomes now, who like pushes the envelope today. So that's a lot of interesting tie-ins there, but that's a great connection between Hank and Andy. I don't know if Andy floats in a raft with tanning oil on. That's like...
I put a couple of the coaches on the spot during media night, and I asked them, because a lot of the old-timers wanted, you know, it's a group that's still very connected to the Chiefs. A lot of them still live in Kansas City. They didn't want to leave when they were done. And so the famous play from that Super Bowl IV game was the 65 toss power trap, which Hank Stram called. They hadn't run the play all year. And he just dug it out of the playbook at the last minute for the Super Bowl. And, you know, the Chiefs production team is named after that play. You can buy T-shirts of it. It's like a famous thing. And so I asked Andy Reid if he had any intention of running it during the Super Bowl or a version of it. And he said that it's so complicated. It was so complicated back then that he didn't even think he could do it now. But that some of the coaches said that they do have plays named for like older versions of Chiefs stuff as sort of a callback to Super Bowl IV and to the team that was in the first Super Bowl. So they're very grounded, I think, which is cool. I mean, you want to look forward, but you want to, you know, a lot of those small market teams, and, you know, I don't want to call Kansas City a small market comparatively, but, you know, compared to some other markets.
But they are population-wise. We don't think of them as a small market team, maybe because they've been such a stable franchise.
True.
But they are a small market team.
Yeah. And I think that means a lot to the fans, right? Mm-hmm. To be connected in that way. I mean, they still have the old, like, Arrowhead Stadium hasn't changed names. I mean, God forbid if they ever named that, like, you know, Goldman Sachs Smart Finance Field or something like that. I think it would melt down, you know? So I think it's a nice kind of vibe that they have going on there.
Yeah, yeah. Another new development, Connor, is that the sun has moved and it's now shining directly on us and our computers. So hopefully the recording software remains intact.
You and I packed like Northerners this week. We really did. Like I'm wearing what I would have worn in 19 degree weather in New Jersey, and I'm melting right now.
Yeah, yeah. We really struggled in the packing department, Connor. We didn't have a good game plan. So speaking of good game plans, all right. What's a matchup in this game that you're fascinated to see how it unfolds?
I want to see how or if. I've been like drawn to like a lot of Deebo Samuel, like what he's been doing, especially like the last few weeks of the season when he really sort of came on.
Yeah.
And how he might manage to slip through the cracks. I mean, they're not even the reverse is a staple play to him at this point.
Yeah.
It's almost part of their, you know, options for running plays. But I think he's one of those sneaky players who could end up emerging as like a potential MVP type candidate this week.
Yeah.
And who matches up against him? I mean, I think having Tyrann Mathieu helps because he can jump everywhere and shut a lot of stuff down. But who consistently matches up against him? Do the Chiefs have enough firepower defensively to shut him down? I think he's going to be a really interesting player.
Yeah.
What about you?
I'm interested to see after the 49ers just embarrassed the Packers with their ground game, how well the Chiefs will be able to stop it. Because, you know, they went into the Vikings game planning to run, and maybe you thought they would be more balanced or something in the Packers game, and was just looking at some film with Sage Rosenfels and Greg Bishop for a little video thing they were doing, and Sage was pointing out that the Packers had two deep safeties for most of the game, and was wondering why there wasn't an adjustment there, but his point was, you know, Patton was probably scared of the 49ers' speed and so wanted to keep the two safeties deep, but of course that opens up the running lanes.
Yeah.
So what is the Chiefs' response to that? And I would imagine they bring someone down in the box. I mean, that would make more sense after what you saw last week, but maybe there is too much of a risk with the deep speed. So I do think that's one of those kind of stuck in a rock in a hard play situations that will be so I'm kind of curious to see when they come out what that looks like.
Kyle Shanahan said today, and this is Tuesday that we're taping this, that when they were looking at the game plan in the middle of the game, and I've never heard a coach say this before, but it was kind of interesting. He said that there were a lot of times against the Packers that we felt we had a better chance of gaining 30 yards by calling a run play instead of a pass play.
And that's like, remarkable.
Wow. Like,
and that's always safer too.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, you pass because it's explosive and it's, you know, moves the ball quickly. But like, if you can, if that's the case, like, then you're so dangerous.
Yeah. I don't know. 49ers are definitely feeling dangerous this week.
Feeling dangerous.
Here's another question that I had for you, and you always have a good radar for this. I felt like I actually think that I've like learned to look for stuff like this from you when we used to cover the Jets together. Was like, how do you feel like both of these teams are handling it from an emotional level? Like, we've been so used to the Patriots where everything has been like locked down, and you know, the Patriots are always the Patriots every Super Bowl week, and it's hard to describe other than they act the way that the Patriots do. The Panthers, I remember very specifically in 2015 or 16, whenever that Super Bowl was, were very uptight. And Ron Rivera had that former Falcons player who was arrested for soliciting a prostitute the night before the Super Bowl come in and talk to the team. Like, everything was more about like all the things you shouldn't be doing, you know, and I felt like everyone was very uptight. What do you think of, what's your kind of take on these teams and how they've been approaching the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I remember that, thinking the Falcons were a little bit a little tight the week they played the Patriots too. And I think that's a common thing when you're going against New England, because it's interesting now that these are two teams, two fresh teams. Of course, neither is facing the Patriots. Remember, we saw the Eagles and felt like they were pretty loose all week as well. So it's hard to tell, because they walked into media night and I thought they both looked like they were having fun. The Chiefs looked like they were like relishing the moment a little bit more. Yeah. Media night. Like, they were playing around a little bit more. They were all videoing. It felt a little bit more like celebratory, and their post game locker room was very celebratory. But I'm not sure exactly what that means. That's just the early read. So
yeah, I think it's interesting because both teams definitely have the mix of like veteran people that are on the team that can teach you how to kind of compartmentalize and enjoy the moment. But at the same time, I mean, there's so much young talent that you have to control and kind of get on the path. You know, I'm really fascinated, and two very experienced coaches and how they're going to handle that as the week goes on.
I think it's a great point, Connor. My laptop is at 6%. I think we should get to a charger. So let's take a quick break.
Let's do it.
Three, two, one. All right, Connor, my low laptop cut you off in the middle of a very important point. But I do
think... Can I just describe our new setup now, by the way?
Sure.
Jenny and I have receded from the sun like vampires, and we are in the corner of this little like stone brick like patio in the hotel. I'm sitting up against the gym door, so if someone needs to exit the gym, they're going to have to find another way to do it, because I got to charge my laptop. We both do. But... you know, these are sort of the perils of Super Bowl week. Everything is, you know, you got to just go with the flow.
Hopefully,
know?
There's not another fire drill and people aren't
there's been like
rapidly leaving the hotel. but yeah, I think it's an interesting point, especially about how the teams are emotionally this week, especially because, you know, Andy has been to the Super Bowl one time, lost that game. Kyle Shanahan recently lost as the OC of the Falcons, certainly has his father's Super Bowl history to draw on. So, Andy Reid has a ton of personal experience of coaching in big games, but just the one Super Bowl. Kyle Shanahan has the one Super Bowl and then his father's experience. And so I think there's a lot of wealth of information to draw on. So it will be interesting, I think, to see. And maybe that's a question I'll ask in the pool report, Connor. How are you keeping this? This is great brainstorming. You're helping me not fail. So like, maybe I'll just ask, you know, like, how are the emotions of the team? How are you keeping everyone's focus?
Yeah.
You know, hopefully I don't ask a question that includes the word distraction, because, you know, we know those get a little tired.
It's a little, yeah. If you were a coach of a Super Bowl team, what would be your biggest fear going into Super Bowl week? Like, what would be your biggest concern?
That someone gets lost the night before a game.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Biggest concern.
Like that someone goes out and just disappears.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
What about you?
This is going to be kind of a nebulous thought, but see if you can follow me here. Do you know when you go to something that is super cool to you, but in a group, and then there's always one person that's like, this is stupid, it's not that cool, you know, I kind of hate this. Like, say you always wanted to see a performer in a concert, and
yeah,
one person in your group is like, well, it's not really him singing, or, you know, the venue's too hot, or something like that. I'm worried about that person, because that's the one person I think that can take the air out of the entire locker room this week.
What's is there a word for that? Like the energy
like a Debbie Downer.
Well,
but like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, like the person who saps all the energy out of a room.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I would, you know, because there's always, I mean, 53 people, percentage-wise, you're going to be there, you know, and maybe someone has not been a big part of the team statistically, felt like they were entitled to more of a bigger role that they didn't get.
Well, right, you do have a lot of that Super Bowl week, because, you know, a lot of players were talking last night, like, this game is a legacy maker, et cetera, yep. et cetera, and of course it is. Everyone thinks of it that way. Like, if you're Super Bowl MVP, you know, it's more than just a trip to Disney World.
Yeah, and, like, so how do you root that out? How do you find that? But it's one of those things where I think if you're a coach and you didn't prepare the right way during the season, you're not even going to be able to catch it, right? Because all year you've been in tune to your team and you kind of feel the way that they're running and when things are need to be done a certain way. But if you're one of those coaches who I think historically spends a lot of time in maybe just the quarterback room or with the defense and you don't see these things developing and happening, this is the kind of time that it could bite you in the butt.
Yeah. Very interesting. That sounds like you sound like a seasoned coach who's got his finger on the pulse of the team, Connor.
I would like to think of myself as sort of an emotional leader here at the MMQB.
You have a high emotional intelligence. You could be hired to be head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh, good. Yeah.
That's another.
If this doesn't work out,
yeah.
You know, there's always options.
It's good to consider other career paths.
Yeah, I like that. What do you say, Jenny? I mean, this is, you know, we've been doing the Oracle all year, and it all kind of builds to this.
It really does,
you know,
yeah.
If I blow this, then, you know, all the other mistakes get magnified, and it really compounds into what is a laugher, prediction-wise, for me this season. So, I don't know. What do you think? I'm going to invite you in for this part of it, because I want both of us to predict. Let's do winner, score, and MVP.
Okay.
Yeah, and I want you to go first.
Oh, you want me to?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Chiefs 31, 49ers 24.
Wow.
So okay. 31-24. Okay. Chiefs win. MVP Patrick Mahomes.
Interesting. Okay. I'm going to do 49ers 30, Chiefs 28, MVP Deebo Samuel.
Ooh, okay. Really tying it into your earlier points.
Just, I think the game is going to break open on some strange 60-yard reverse run that he has for a touchdown. I've made giant, very specific mistakes before when I was at NFL.com. For some reason or another, before the Patriots-Seahawks Super Bowl, I said the game is going to hinge on a critical Julian Edelman special teams error, and the Patriots are going to lose. And, he ended up scoring the game-winning touchdown, and then everybody in the comments, because the NFL account, this was back when I was working for the NFL account has like 50 million followers, and so they screenshotted all of our predictions, and so everyone kept sending them to Julian and after the game and being like, what a dipshit this guy is, check it out.
Oh,
and
no!
So, you know, I've learned my lesson that you need to be more positive with these things, so Deebo Samuel, there you go. I'm very excited for your future success. Julian, I'm sorry. And congratulations on your many Super Bowl victories.
Yeah. Wow. All so, right.
You know, you have to learn your lesson at some point, you know. But again, I mean, it's been a really bad year for predictions, but I'm thinking that nailing the Super Bowl, the score, and the MVP will really redeem myself. I think it's going to be a big year.
That would really establish you as an oracle.
What about our last Vrentis consensus for the Super Bowl for the 2019-2020 season?
Yeah.
This is a big one.
Yeah. Well, I think it may be something similar to what we talked about on the Monday podcast. Gary and I had a discussion about, you know, offensive creativity in this game. And I think the consensus is that we're all excited to see, to have an offensive play that's kind of like the story of the game, right? You know, mm-hmm. whether it's like one of these funny named Chiefs plays that you set, you know, maybe there's one with the tie to Super Bowl IV history, or
ooh.
Maybe there's something else that Andy Reid came up with. You know, I feel like this is a year for another Philly special.
Yes.
And I think we can all get excited about that. And I feel like, you know, I'm excited to watch how the two play callers handle this game. And they're both so creative and come up with all these ideas, and now's the time to empty your bag of tricks. So I think it's just a, you know, the consensus is that we're all pretty excited to see some creativity on display in this game.
Think about if you're a defensive coordinator, because the Chiefs have historically, I mean, you did that great story on Andy Reid. They steal from everywhere and everything. You know, high schools, you know, NAIA teams. When Matt Nagy was there, they ran arena football plays, you know?
Yeah.
And like, if you're Steve Spagnuolo or you're, you know, Robert Saleh, it's like, what do you even, I mean, you can't prepare for everything. It's just impossible.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
really interesting. And that is scary, right?
That, yeah. And I think, like, it's so fun to trace the origin of the play. And everyone did that with Philly Special. And, like, that's obviously, like, a Doug Peterson's a Reed protege. And so I feel like there's just, like, I don't know. We're setting up for another one of those. And I'm kind of really excited to, like, pull up some, like, Southwest Wyoming State film. And be like, yeah, this is the play that Andy Reid discovered. And, you know, or if it's, if your prediction comes true, if it's the 49ers win, you know, maybe there's something there, Connor.
And then we get to go to Wyoming State and we get to buy a couple sweatshirts and we film a great podcast from Wyoming State. It'll be great.
Everyone wins.
Everyone
That's
wins.
That's a true consensus,
That's
Connor.
Right.
There's only one winner in the Super Bowl, but everyone wins with Apprentice consensus.
That's right.
And we don't have a Bachelor segment because we were both at media night last night. We saw that there was some major drama going down.
Yeah. I mean, the country music singer is upset that his ex-girlfriend was brought in to see him during a date. So, you know, we're going to catch up on this because I feel already like I'm going to have a good take on this. So,
well, it's good timing because there is less to cover now that the season is ending. Mm-hmm. So we'll have plenty of time to dive into the Bachelor game tape in about 8 days.
That's right.
Well, this has been fun, Connor. I enjoyed recording this podcast with you on a patio with the sun shining in and the ambient noise of airplanes.
It's crazy that the next time we're going to do this is Tuesday in the office and the season is going to be over.
That is pretty crazy.
But thank you to everyone who stuck with us for 2019 and 2020.
This has been very fun.
Absolutely.
We've really enjoyed it. So
no doubt.
We're excited to recap the game 1 week from now.
Yeah.
So until then, the MMQB Weekside Podcast is me, Jenny Vrentis, and Shelby. We are, okay, Shelby, I messed that up. So, 3, 2, 1. Until then, the MMQB Weekside Podcast is me, Jenny Vrentis, and Connor Orr. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Moravec is emeritus executive director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcasts for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.